Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Three and Out podcast. I'm Kyle Reams. Today, I'm joined by Alex Amster.
Hi, guys.
And Jadiv Pant.
What's up?
We are very happy to welcome on Chad Kanoff, quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, a Harvard Wesley graduate, went to Princeton his senior year, won Ivy League Offensive Player of the Year, signed with the Cardinals last year as an undrafted free agent. Welcome, Chad.
Hi, Chad. Welcome to the Three and Out show. How are you doing?
Hey, good.
If you don't mind, we'd like to just hop into some questions that we have for you.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So in 2013, you chose to go to the Ivy League instead of going to Vanderbilt. And what was the biggest reason behind this choice?
I just kind of thought it was a better fit for me. You know, I know that's not a great answer. I just kind of had a change of heart and thought that I would have a better experience at Princeton.
I have a question about coming from an FCS school like Princeton to the NFL. Was that a very big adjustment? Do you think you had more of an adjustment than, let's say, some of the other players who played at D1 schools?
Maybe slightly more, but I think it's a big adjustment for everybody. But it's not that dissimilar to jumping from high school to college was a big adjustment, and now jumping from college to the NFL is an even bigger adjustment.
We were just wondering, have you had the chance to meet and talk with Cliff Kingsbury yet? And if you have, what was your first impression like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm back here already, so I've had, this is my third day of meetings with him leading the quarterback room. He's been great. He's obviously very smart and well thought out, and it's going to be, a really fun, exciting offense.
After being an undrafted free agent, why did you choose to sign with the Arizona Cardinals after working out with a couple other teams?
They just kind of seemed like a great fit for me at the time. I got along with the coach. I thought it'd be a good place to start. Yeah, to start my career.
And what was it like the first time you put on your pads and you really got and started playing in the NFL? What was that moment like for you?
It was super fun. I mean, I think it was really fun running out to practice in our stadium, which is like a big NFL stadium, and then playing in the preseason was also, I mean, it's super fun. It's just playing football and honestly at the highest level, it's a dream come true.
And you're in a pretty competitive QB room. What's it like, you and the other guys in there?
It's good. I mean, I've been lucky to be with really good guys. Like the last group was just Mike Glennon, Josh Rosen, and Sam Bradford, and they were all really good guys. And Josh, I've obviously known, and Brett Hundley now this year is a really good guy.
So our audience might be a little unfamiliar with the concept of a practice squad. Can you kind of explain what the practice squad is, what your job entails, and some of this stuff? Like, what's the experience like?
Your job is to help the people practice, obviously. So you don't play on the game day, so you don't suit up for the games. You still go to the games and are on the sidelines, but you're not in pads. And then during the week, you just kind of do whatever the coaches tell you. So it's being on the scout team for the special teams, or filling in for guys that are hurt at not even necessarily positions that you've played. But I mean, it's definitely a big part of the team, because most college teams have like over 100 players, and the NFL is 53 on the roster, and then a 10-man practice squad. So it's only 63 guys total. So there's just a lot of stuff to be done throughout the week. But it's not, I don't think the line, I mean, I was on the active roster for a couple weeks, and it was no different than really being on the practice squad, because the third quarterback doesn't suit up anyway. So I think the line is a little bit blurred between being like one of the last guys on the roster and being on the practice squad.
And we obviously have to address what's sort of the elephant in the room. Has this news and all of the media hype about a potential first overall quarterback draft pick, has that changed the dynamic in the QB room? Have you noticed anything about that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's, you know, it's a business. I think everybody understands that. So you just focus on what you can control, you know?
And do you think as time goes on, more Ivy League players will end up going to the NFL, or do you think the number will eventually decrease?
I think there's been some, like, people have looked at this, and the number's been going up, I think, for the last, definitely in the last, like, 10 years. I don't know. like 10 years compared to 20 years and 30 years ago. And I would imagine it's going to continue to go up because the financial aid packages are getting a lot better in the Ivy League. So it's making it, a better like financial decision for a lot of people, which allows people that are really good players to go there and still have a chance to play in the NFL. And I think the path is pretty clear for, there's been a lot of guys that, I mean, that have gotten drafted that didn't sign the guy that, so I mean, it's definitely an option if you're, have a good career there.
I have another question for you. Was there kind of a like rookie, like welcome to the NFL moment you had in practice, where, you're just shocked at, like a player's ability, or you made a great pass and you saw a receiver run an amazing route. Were there any of those moments where you just, really just like in awe of like a defense?
Yeah,
end?
Definitely. Whenever we do runs, like I try to run with the receivers a lot of the time, and just the starts by everybody, I feel like I'm running in cement. Whenever I like push off, everybody else is like accelerating and is like 2 yards in front of me, like right away. It's crazy.
And I just have one last question. Obviously, you didn't go to the NFL Combine, and former Ivy League quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick had a Wunderlic score of 48. We're just wondering, what do you think your Wunderlic score would be, or if you've taken it already?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I took it my junior year, but they don't tell you that, and your scores don't get released. But definitely not a 48. That's really impressive.
Well, I mean, Harvard Westlake quarterback, you probably would have a very good score.
It's a hard test though. You'd be surprised. You can go take it online. You gotta go really fast. It's not,
that's time.
Not easy.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chad. Yeah. I really appreciate it. And,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course, man.
Good luck. Hopefully the season goes well for you.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot, bud.
Big thanks to Chad Kanoff for coming on the show, talking with us. Really appreciate him taking the time out of his now practicing schedule to join us. And now for some NFL news around the football world. We're going to start off, actually without the NFL, we're going to start off with the AAF. It's over. The dream is done.
So it's been a mess. Players had to pay like to get back to their homes, and they didn't have injury insurance.
Yeah,
I saw the interview on ACL. Yeah, I mean, some of these stories were just like egregious. It was like, it was even worse than like minor league baseball out there, the conditions. I mean,
right. And like some players were getting bills on their credit card for like, you know, apparently hotels like worth up to 50 grand in charge.
Because they haven't paid their, because the team's never paid their hotel
exactly.
bill.
It's so
crazy.
It's been a mess. Yeah. I thought this would be a league that would really stick around for a long
we
time.
We all thought that.
But the
you
thing
know what?
Is,
on to the XFL.
Yeah, honestly, Vince McMahon has more funding, and they'll definitely be able to create a better pool of players. They won't have the same support of the NFL, obviously, but it's good to see the like silver lining out of this would just be some of these AAF players being signed.
It was over 20 now, I think.
Yeah,
it's at 30 plus
wow.
now.
So
there've been 32.
It's good that these players got to put in work in the offseason in pads and show teams what they were worth and be able to be signed. That's great.
Right. So. Personally, do you guys both believe that a second, like, contemporary to the NFL will work?
I think the only way it could work is if they reach some agreement prior to any, like, league debut. They reach some agreement with the Players Association where it can be treated as a developmental league, because that was the problem with the AAF. That was always their goal. They tried to work that out, but they started and they conceptualized and did everything and like went for it yeah. before they had that deal in place.
It's hard to do that in a year, honestly. Like, so, it takes way more time.
Yeah, and kind of thinking back to the USFL, unless they have financial support from the NFL, like, you have to have a ton of money. I know Trump and a few other big investors at the time were funding the USFL, and players like Steve Young, and really, I know that basically the Patriots, they were negotiating between the leagues at that time, and another secondary league for football in America is going to have a ton of funding. So that's why the XFL probably won't be able to be anywhere close to the NFL yeah. ever, because they're not going to be able to pay these players
and
more.
Really, the problem is that no league is going to be able to compete with the NFL. The only way that they can do it is to work with the NFL, which is what the AAF tried to do. I mean, think about the last time the NFL really had a developmental league. They've never had one. NFL Europe is the closest thing. There have been three or four good players who played in NFL Europe.
Yeah, I mean,
There's that one guy on the Panthers, the defensive end, who made it on a roster.
Well, of all time, it was Kurt Warner, Vinatieri, William Perry, Jake Delhomme, James Harrison. There's no one.
James Harrison also played on practice squads. I mean, like, this, I don't really think these leagues are going to work. I think kids will always go to college. I don't see any future. I would personally like them to just invest. I would actually love this, like a flag football league with retired NFL players. I think that would be way more
just
entertaining
to
watch.
Just the NFL version of the Big Three?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That would be so fun. Imagine Vic.
That would be very fun. You can't lie.
But yeah, I really don't think that the XFL or AAF is going to be able to succeed as its own standalone league. It really does need, because let's be honest, the NFL has a monopoly on football. No, they have all the best players. No one is going to decide to go to the AAF or XFL over the NFL. So I just think the only possible route for a league like this, for any future league, would just be to kind of work as a G League of some sorts.
Right. Unless you have billions of dollars, which you're willing to spend, then you can't really compete with the NFL.
And then next, we have some major signing news. DeMarcus Lawrence got paid by the Cowboys. 5 years, $105 million, $65 of which guaranteed.
Good for him making that money.
I'm dancing in my seat right now. I mean, as a Giants fan, it's just wonderful. You know, you have Mr. Mediocre, Rain Prescott, who's waiting to be re-signed. You have Zeke, who's waiting to be re-signed. You have Byron Jones, who's waiting to be re-signed. And you also have Amari Cooper, who's waiting to be re-signed. So, you know, you give this guy a ton of money, who really has made his career off Eric Flowers. I mean, you can look at his production against
he's
other
also
right
made,
tackles.
He's made his career off of contract years.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like every year has been a contract year for him.
He's had only two double-digit sack seasons, and for him to get $65 million guaranteed, that's kind of just a little ridiculous.
I think he's earned it, honestly. He's been a top pass rusher in the league for the past couple of years. I think it's a lot when you take into account the amount of other contracts they have and need to sign. It's a lot, but I think he's earned that, and I think he would have gotten that somewhere else.
Well,
I disagree. I think the Cowboys are a players' team. They're all about paying their players, and they will. I don't think he'll get that kind of money on most NFL teams. I think, as you said, right, only two double digit sacks.
I think teams
that's ridiculous.
I think teams are needy enough for pass rushers that he would have gotten this much.
Right. I think another team would have given him this much, but a team like the Cowboys, who are already strapped for cap space and they have Jason Witten already for $5 million this year, with all those guys I listed, young, better players, more valuable to their team than DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, it's really nice to see.
D end is arguably the second most important position in the NFL.
I mean, Dak Prescott's not really a good quarterback, so they're not going to win with
him. All of those potential free agents that the Cowboys have, I think he's their most valuable. I think he's the best of them.
Right, because running backs are kind of indispensable, and their quarterback's obviously
dispensable,
mediocre.
You mean?
Dispensable. You can find them in the late rounds. And really, Byron Jones, he had one good season. Amari Cooper, though.
Very far.
Amari Cooper, we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, it's kind of the Cowboys' way, and he's going to have to run stunts inside because Eric Flowers is playing guard with the Redskins. So if he wants to get that good production, he's going to have to run stunts.
At least he's staying with Eric Flowers. And now we have another big signing today. Amster, you're going to love this one. Sterling Shepard reported to have signed a four-year, $41 million deal.
With around 20-something guaranteed. I mean,
I just really find it funny that the Giants traded OBJ and then signed two mediocre receivers to large deals.
Hey, don't make fun of the Golden Tate Warriors, man.
Golden Tate Warriors.
Well, the thing is about this, it's interesting because Golden Tate is, he's above 30, and I really don't understand. This just, like, makes me question the Odell traded even more, I guess. Sterling Shepard definitely deserves that contract. Like, the Giants aren't usually a team who will extend young players before they reach the market, and this is a perfect example of why you do that, because he would be better than any receiver on the open market this offseason. That's pretty easy to say, and he would have gotten a lot more money. I mean, Adam Humphrey's deal, I think, was a little bit like almost around the same. So I can only imagine what he would have gotten, especially a few years down the line. It's a good signing. I think it's going to be weird. Evan Ingram likes to play out of slot. Golden Tate plays out of the slot. Sterling Shepard plays out of slot.
It just doesn't
Saquon
fit.
Barkley, like, when he sometimes can play in the slot. So,
and when they had Odell, that is seven slot players.
Oh. Well, I mean, Odell can line up slot outside, yeah, I mean, but he's a perfect complement to Odell. He's a good receiver too, not a one.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's why I don't like this deal, and this is why I also really disliked the Tyrell Williams deal. And we've seen this for years. You overpaying number two receivers in the hopes that they will become number one receivers never works out.
Right, and I think they're kind of not doing receiver by committee, but they do have, you know, Evan Engram, Golden Tate, and now him. The options are there. They just need a dominant force in the passing game. But yeah.
And I mean, speaking of another number two receiver, who we'll see if he can become a number one receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster was just
annihilated
by Antonio Brown for some reason. I'm not sure why.
I mean, the biggest diva in sports.
I mean, have you ever seen a guy, like, I understand him kind of complaining just to get traded out of Pittsburgh, but have you ever seen a guy hurt his legacy this much, like, for no reason?
Honestly, if a year ago, Antonio Brown was, I will say, probably top 10 most liked NFL players.
Yeah, I mean, there's a textbook list of things you do to get people to not like you. And
it really
and
seemed like he was
fighting
getting
with a fan favorite of a team that just traded you away off your wish. Like, what's your problem with the Steelers?
My favorite part about it, and for those who don't know what Antonio Brown did, some Steelers fan tweeted something at him.
A team MVP photo
joke.
Of Juju Smith-Schuster.
It started off as it started off as someone tweeted a joke, and Antonio Brown responded, taking offense to the joke, and then someone responded with team MVP Juju Smith-Schuster, to which Antonio Brown went on some rant about how...
Boy fumbled away the whole
season.
I mean, he's not wrong.
You didn't play in the last game of the season.
He's not wrong. Like, Juju didn't deserve the team MVP, but you're over that. Why like make yourself the enemy in the public and be that distraction?
And then for some reason, when people were starting to realize that this was not a nice thing to do, Antonio Brown decides, I'm going to post this DM where Juju looks like a nice guy who's just trying to get better, and I'm going to say, look at how bad he is.
Mic drop.
What?
I don't understand.
He cannot be expecting people to like him at this point.
After Juju, though? I mean, like, that's like the guy Steelers Nation loves. He might be the favorite player in Pittsburgh.
And Juju has not said anything. Juju didn't start
anything. Nice guy. Well, my dad met him. Very nice
Juju
guy.
Juju is a nice guy, but I will say this. Like, he gets way too much attention. Like, you know, he's kind of built his fame off like social media a little bit. I'm sure he did have more yards than AB this year, but he hasn't been double teamed for a single snap in his life, basically.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I think his production's gonna go down this year, but he's still super likable player, so there's no reason to do that.
But I just don't get it. And then on the flip side, we have Le'Veon Bell, James Conner. They're happy. They're doing well.
Yeah, Le'Veon's getting paid, and he's respectably, you know, supporting his former teammate. And
because, do you know why? No one here did anything wrong to each other. Le'Veon probably hurt the team's chances by this. Antonio Brown definitely hurt the team's chances by throwing a football at Big Ben. Is that what he did? Is that the consensus?
In practice. I mean, they wouldn't have made the playoffs anyways, but you don't do that when it's a must-win game.
And now we will be moving on to Mock Draft 2.0. It is 1 week before the NFL draft. We've done one with 10 picks. Now we're going to do a quick 16 pick before next week in our draft special. We will do a full first round draft. We're going to start off round one, pick one. Arizona Cardinals is going to select Kyler Murray, quarterback, Oklahoma.
I think this is inevitable. All the reports are leaning towards this pick. I think no one can refute it at this point.
And the interesting thing is, You just can't go with all these sources and reports. You can't go against them right now because there's too many overwhelming ones just saying Kyler Murray's going number one overall. But the thing that keeps tripping me up is Steve Keim, the Cardinals GM, picked Rosen last year. How often do you see a GM give up on a player they drafted, nonetheless a first-round draft pick, nonetheless a quarterback who usually gets more leniency, and also after only 1 year? It doesn't really make sense because Cliff Kingsbury doesn't run the team. As much as he loves Kyler Murray, it's not really his decision.
Well, the thing is, this could be, like, this is a new strategy, hypothetically. We've never seen this before, and they could try it. I mean, years ago, what some teams are doing seems crazy, where you just get a quarterback on the rookie deal and then build around that and then start over.
I mean, making a Super Bowl with a quarterback on the rookie contract needs to seem controversial.
I mean, the Browns process, I mean, not to go to NBA, but the 76ers process of just stacking up on draft picks and just seeing what happens.
Right, but
or what the Patriots do of just getting as many third and fourth round picks as they can and just seeing what hits.
And using the second week of free agency.
What I don't see why they wouldn't try, oh, we drafted one quarterback in a rookie year, or we drafted one quarterback, his rookie year didn't work out. We'll try another one.
Yeah, but I mean, it's unfair to say his rookie year didn't work out. He showed a lot of promise. Even though the stats don't show it, who did he have on his offense? Let alone he had the worst offensive line
Larry
in football.
Larry Fitzgerald.
If he's your number one receiver, then I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's a really bad offense.
I have to go with Alex there. But the thing is, there's no reason not to try, because I honestly don't think this team is good enough where Nick Bosa or Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams, whoever they would take next, great players. Kyler Murray has the potential to turn around a franchise.
And I mean, honestly, this just shows the importance of the quarterback position. I mean, it's no longer getting the number three quarterback in the draft. You want the best quarterback in the draft, and that's final.
Or tank
for two. I would say, though, that I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back, basically, because there's too many quality defensive players, and why would they give? I just don't see them giving up on Rosen one year.
Hypothetically, let's say they trade Rosen. What's your ideal payback? What do you think they get back?
A second and third round pick. They want a one. They're not going to get it. So it's going to be a second, early second at best. I'd say New England's on the table. Giants on the table. Even Redskins were reported to be on the table.
Chargers probably on the table.
But today Redskins say they're showing interest in like the current college prospects, like the ones in this draft. So
we'll get to that later. But on to pick number two, San Francisco 49ers going to take Nick Bosa, defensive end out of Ohio State. One of the top defensive end prospects we've seen in years.
Probably the best overall prospect in this draft.
Up there in this draft, yeah.
And his brother's good. I mean, he's a better prospect than his brother. So, like, we'll see how he plays out. But basically, this would make sense. If you guys don't remember, when the 49ers were good in the Alex Smith Kaepernick era, their defense was atrocious.
That was deadly.
Carlos Rogers, Justin Smith. You got Alden Smith,
Patrick Willis.
Yeah, exactly. Navarro Bowman. Now they got out Quan Alexander. You know, they got D Ford, and they already have Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner.
How many defensive ends?
And Solomon Thomas.
How many defensive linemen have they drafted
in the last 4 years?
Jesus.
Yeah. First round. And Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas have not played out well. Solomon Thomas has under 5 sacks, and he was the third overall pick.
And then next, we have the New York Jets picking third, sticking with defensive linemen or edge rushers. We have Josh Allen, linebacker out of Kentucky.
What a story. I mean, this guy went from a 2-star recruit, and now he's going to be taken in the top 5, probably the top 5 of the NFL draft. I think this is just amazing. I mean, what a guy. I mean, he had a great year this year. I think he shows a lot of potential, and I think he'll be a great fit in New York.
I do agree, and this is kind of the fallout of them not signing Anthony Barr. They need some help
getting
on the
edge. Getting rid of Sheldon Richardson.
Right. So they need some pass rush help, and he would definitely fit Greg Williams' scheme. You know what I mean? He can kind of play around to the player's strengths. So this is a no-brainer pick for New York. Obviously, Quinnen Williams is in play, but I don't think they can take an inside guy with that edge rush need right now.
I'm personally not a fan of it just because I don't like that there are two Josh Allens drafted top 10 back-to-back years.
Oh, well, I mean, Josh Allen is in the same division as the other Josh Allen, so how awesome would it be for Josh Allen?
A Josh Allen sack. That would be great. And then next we have Oakland Raiders picking fourth. This is a pick they might trade, but we're doing a no-trade mock draft. So number four, Quinnen Williams, defensive tackle out of Bama.
And if Quinnen Williams makes it to the fourth overall pick, And the Raiders are there. They didn't trade the pick. They need to sprint this pick to the podium because he's arguably the best defensive player in this draft.
He was dominant.
I mean, his 10-yard split was faster than Aaron Donald. This guy is an absolute beast. And don't worry about the one-year starter. That's just Alabama having such a great program. He dominated. I mean, Jadeve and I were together watching the Alabama-LSU game. And we're like, who's this number 92? He's in the backfield every single play. He's just going to be a beast in the NFL. He's going to have that dominant effect like Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald.
He had that great semifinal game. I remember watching him in the playoffs.
He had the great Kyler Murray
interview.
Destroyed
Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray and all that good.
Never mind. And then next, we have the Buccaneers selecting Devin White, LSU linebacker, Amster's favorite player in this draft.
I don't know if he's my favorite player, but I will say this. If you lose one LSU linebacker, you just get another one. This one runs a 4-4-2. He's an athletic freak. He's a three-down linebacker, and you can just plug him and play in Tampa Bay. He'll work great in Todd Bowles' defense.
I remember watching the Alabama-LSU game.
He's suspended for the half. Like, once
but he came
in,
back, it was amazing. It was honestly crazy.
And he's just one of those linebacker prospects. Like, again, if he makes it past five, the Giants will take him immediately.
And then next, New York Giants, possibly controversial pick. A lot of people thought they'd go Haskins. We have him going.
Let's just note this is an Alex pick.
This is an Alex pick. Alex fought very hard for this pick. Ed Oliver, defensive tackle out of Houston, who going into the season was arguably the number one pick.
Yes. So the reason I'm doing this pick is because Dave Gettleman has, even though the Giants' offense was bad last season, he's complaining about the holes in the Giants' defense. Oh, we scored the most points in the division, but we finished last. Kind of that stuff. So they're going to focus on defense in round one, even if they need a quarterback. They're obsessed with Eli.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
They've never shown any willingness to get rid of Eli.
Right.
I think after Kyler, I don't see the reason for them to get a quarterback. I'd wait for another year.
Right,
they're going to be inevitably bad.
I think number 17, they could either move up or unfortunately take Eli 2.0 and Daniel Jones. Probably worse, but that's for next week's episode. Ed Oliver is a freak. I mean, you just looked at him. He ran around a 4.7 40, and he's just powerful. He's undersized, sure, at around 285.
And attitude problems. I mean, the beef he had with his coach earlier in the year did not look good.
When he refused to take the jacket off.
But he's explosive. I mean, this guy, he could have an Aaron Donald type effect. I know he's been getting the comp a ton, and it's not completely accurate, but they're both undersized, and they're both explosive, and this is a no-brainer pick. The Giants have to take him here. He's the best player by far on the board.
And the next, going to the Jaguars, they're going to stay in Florida and take Juwan Taylor.
Gator Nation!
Florida offensive tackle, our second offensive player off the board.
They like local guys. They picked Taven Bryan. I'm pretty
Blake
sure from
Bortles.
Florida last year.
Blake Bortles from
UCF.
UCF.
Exactly. So this kind of feeds right into their pick. He has great footwork. He hasn't had...
He's big. He's really big.
He's a big guy.
But he has nice, smooth footwork. I think like power is a little bit of a problem with him. But he has nice hand use, and I think it's a good pick. It'll shore up the line with Cam Robinson coming back. But I'm just not 100% sure he's going to be a great tackle. I'd say he's going to be on the right side earlier in his career, and I think he's going to struggle a little bit. But I think you have to plug him and play. I mean, you have Nick Foles. It's time to step up the offense.
And then pick number 8, we have the Detroit Lions taking Mississippi State D-end Montez Sweat.
4-4-1 and goodbye. I mean, he has a good playing weight right now, and he's definitely very bendy, very athletic, great with hand usage. I think he could be a liability in the run game. He's very similar to Brian Burns, the Florida State edge rusher. And really, what this guy has like all the attributes. I'd say he is slightly undersized, so that's a little bit of concern. But Matt Patricia will love to use him. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife. Maybe he can be in coverage a little bit just because of how athletic he is. I mean, he's faster than most NFL receivers.
We'll see if he's able to do that, but
I call him combine clickbait.
And then next we have the Buffalo Bills taking Jonah Williams, offensive tackle from Alabama.
Big boy from Bama. They need someone to protect Josh Allen. Why not get him?
Yeah, and I mean I like this pick. It's a solid pick, except for the fact that they need help at every other position.
I mean, you have to go with the offensive line. You got to protect the quarterback.
You have your quarterback of the future. He's shown he can run. So Amster's still dying over Jadav's combine clickbait comment, by the way.
It's just so accurate. I mean, you just see all the little kids. He ran a 4-4-1.
You literally just said
he's
that.
He's still cracking up. That is like word for word what you said. But back to the current one. Jonah Williams, number one offensive tackle in this draft. 6'4", big guy.
He's a nasty player. I mean, he's a bruiser.
300 pounds.
Yeah. Right, and he's played tough in the trenches for Alabama.
Unanimous All-American this year.
Right, and he's just a really solid tackle.
Yeah.
Do you feel bad for him, though? I mean, going to Buffalo, not really a great town.
Yeah, not a great sports city.
I'm going to bring Matthew on just to yell at you guys about that.
You know, he's a good plug-and-play, though.
He is. He's the most NFL-ready tackle in this draft by far. And then next, we have the Denver Broncos taking another quarterback at pick 10.
Is he tall and white?
He's not. They're subverting it. Dwayne Haskins, QB out of Ohio State. John Elway has never shown an ability to hit on quarterbacks, and he's just going to keep trying.
I mean, this is shocking. He was really big on Flacco. I mean, obviously he's not going to take Drew Lock. If you've read the reports, he hasn't really been that big enough on Drew Lock to take him, especially with Haskins still on the board.
I mean, you have to be high on your quarterback when it's like, that's your quarterback at the moment. You don't know what's going to happen in the draft. But if they have a chance to take Haskins, I don't think they're going to pass. This is someone who's looked NFL ready and looked solid.
I mean, right. He had a great final three-game stretch. It was insane. He looked very good.
And his pro day, in the whole testing process, he's been great. You don't really need the 40-yard dash time because right. He's a pocket quarterback.
He's a pocket quarterback, and he's... It's not like they have they currently have a fast QB. It's like it's a different scheme. Like no, Joe Flacco is slow as hell, and Dwayne Haskins is not much faster. So it's not like it's a crazy idea that they're just going to
move in the pocket too.
Right, they're just going to take a younger QB. I don't see a problem with this pick. Well, the only reason that Dwayne Haskins gives you some fear is that if the Broncos take him, I don't trust that he's going to be good.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to develop him properly. He's a dangerous pocket passer, but if they do take him, you're just going to see later in the season Joe Flacco on the bench with that beard touching his hair.
I mean, I personally think he's not right.
By the way, poor Joe Flacco is going to get benched 2 years in a row for rookie QBs.
Poor Joe
QBs.
Flacco. He's still getting paid like $20 million a year.
He's not ready.
Nothing.
Dwayne Haskins definitely isn't ready to start right now. I think it's a decent fit. He'll be the backup.
He's more NFL ready than Lamar was last year, though.
For sure.
And then next, at pick 11, Cincinnati Bengals are going to take Andre Dillard.
Tackle, Washington State.
So that's three tackles. Is three tackles now, right?
Yes, three tackles.
And I mean,
this is
three
really
tackles out of
tackle
five
class.
Offensive players.
Right. And Andre Dillard, the thing about him is that he has taken over 900 college gate snaps, so he's definitely very prepared, but he has the highest potential out of any tackle in the class.
How do you pronounce collegiate?
College gate? Collegiate or something
it's
like
collegiate.
That. Collegiate. He's taken over 900 snaps, like way more than any other offensive tackle in this class. And really, he was dominant at Washington State. He's a big presence, and that's what Cincinnati needs right now. I mean, they believe in Andy Dalton, and that they're going to have to protect him. They have Bobby Hart, who's a problem. So,
how old do you think Andy Dalton is? I feel like he's been in the
30.
League for 25 years.
I'd say he's 30.
I have no idea.
Really? I can remember him at TCU. Like, I still remember him playing.
He's 31.
The Bengals are such a weird team in that they are the most, other than maybe the Titans, they are the most forgettable team in the league.
I mean, this is your franchise leader. Like,
Andy Dalton, I mean, if they want to protect him, if they really do believe in him, sure, go for it. I just don't think he's the future for them.
I mean, the Bengals are a franchise that are always content with being mediocre.
Yeah, and it's all down to the owners. But for what they're trying to do, this is a good pick. I like Andre Dillard a lot. And then next, Green Bay Packers taking T.J. Hawkinson, tight end, out of Iowa.
Timothy Jones.
Not his name.
Every time you hear about this guy, like, they're raving. And all of a sudden, Iowa has become tight end U because, I mean, George Kittle last year, you have Noah Fant, and now T.J. Hawkinson. Noah Fant this year, along with T.J. Hawkinson, two great tight end prospects. Specifically with Hawkinson, his route running is great, and he has had the best pass and run blocking out of basically any tight end prospect since Jason Witten. So that's just an accurate comp. You know, he's going to be like an old reliable tight end, except he's faster.
Yeah.
And he's great hands.
You know, just building off that, I think it's really rare now in college football to find a good blocking tight end with the evolution, obviously, of the spread offense. But, I mean, in the NFL, blocking tight ends are still as valuable as ever. That can be seen with
Gronk.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's what
Gronk,
I was going
to
say.
You need to dominate the line of scrimmage
to win. Gronk could have not run a single route last year, and he would have still been very valuable to the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Dwayne Allen, they had him too. A lot of good blocking tight ends in the league. They're very valued. So Hawkinson won't last long on draft night.
Next, we have Devin Bush, linebacker out of Michigan, going to Miami.
This is a steal. I mean, the more tape I watch on Devin Bush, the more explosive he really is. I mean, he's just flying across the field. He's great in run and pass pro. And this is a steal for Miami. And, you know, he gets to be near Drew Rosenhaus, who recently signed him and repped him. But this is good for Miami, a team that's rebuilding, looking to get a quarterback down the line. You got to start building your defense. And then you get the quarterback, and that's how it goes.
Yeah. And then next, Atlanta Falcons selecting Brian Burns, defensive end out of FSU.
I love this kid. My favorite player in the draft. He played around 230 at Florida State, but now he's up to 250. He ran a 4.53 on the 40-yard dash, and his bend is elite. And his hand usage, there's tape of him in his sophomore year embarrassing. I'm going to say it's like embarrassing who we have mocked to the Jaguars, Jawan Taylor. But his tape is unbelievable. He definitely has Von Miller bend. And he was a liability in the run game, but since he's added 20 pounds, he could be a Von Miller type impact. I don't see him sliding far on draft day. And my comp right now is Vic Beasley, actually. So they'd be a great 1-2 punch. But Brian Burns, like, I would be happy with him 6th to the Giants. Probably won't happen, but I think he's the best pass rusher in this class.
Trade down and take him. And then next, pick number 15, Washington taking quarterback Drew Lock. Quarterback out of
Missouri. I mean, Alex Smith isn't the future. We all know this. I think they kind of just see it with there's no regrets here. Like, there's no like repercussions.
Right. But I they need a quarterback of the future. They have a solid team. They were doing pretty well last year with Alex Smith. I doubt he's coming back this year, but
I think they can do some things.
I think Keenum is really just a bum.
I think Drew Lock is pretty NFL ready.
Potential. Yeah. He has the arm.
He likes to dance around the pocket. Like, he's kind of like a more safe RG3.
I think Jay Gruden can do some things with him.
Yeah. I like this pick. It's close between him and Daniel Jones at Duke is the next best quarterback here. I think Washington's going to take Lock. And then finally, pick number 16, Carolina Panthers taking Christian Wilkins. Defensive end, Clemson, national championship winning player.
Winning attitude, baby. Yeah. I mean, he's very good. He's probably, I say, the best player on that defensive line.
Best run defender in this class by far. He at over 300 pounds, you know, he's like a dancing bear. Way better version of Vita Vea. And he's just he would be great on the Panthers for the interior D-line. I mean, they had Dontari Poe last year. He's basically a better version of him.
Yeah, and I like this pick. I think it's a solid, safe one. Just get him in there, let him play. Panthers not in a great position. We'll see how Cam is doing following his...
He should take an Andrew Luck year, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I doubt it's going to happen. Cam's going to want to play through
They'll take Will Greer in, like, the third round, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But that is going to do it for our mock draft as well as our show today. Huge thanks to Chad Kanoff coming on, talking to us today. On behalf of Jadiff and Alex, I'm Kyle Remus. Thank you all for listening. See you next week.